سورة الفاتحة. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان اللعين الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الحمد لله الذي هدانا لهذا وما كنا لنهتدي لولا أن هدانا الله. والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين سيدنا ومولانا أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله الحكيم في كتابه المتين: بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، إن الدين عند الله الإسلام. صلوات Before we give the condolences to the Imam of our time and to the Prophet and to Fatima al-Zahra salamullah alayha, it is incumbent that the message must be given. So that our responsibility is done on this day of Ashura. The subject was understanding Islam, and we have learned that Islam, it is understood by the Messenger and by Ahlul Bayt. They are the ones who made us understand what is true Islam. And they demanded from us that we obey it, that we emulate it, that we follow it. Without it will not be Islam, and it will not be the relationship that we have. They won't be a relationship. And when we look at the Prophet, we look at the Imams, we see their example is different than many of the things that we do, even, let's say, in prayers. Allah invited us to pray, encouraged us to pray, made it wajib to pray. But when we pray, truly, how much of our heart is in prayer? How much of our mind is in prayer? On one hand, we see that to get us to pray is so hard. But when we look at the examples of the Prophet, we see that his love for prayer was such. His love for ibadat was such that even Allah had to stop him. He used to pray the whole night, and he used to hurt himself praying the whole night because of his love for Allah. And Allah had to say, "Qum al-layla illa qalila." He said, "Do stand before Allah, but Ya Rasul, only a little bit, you're hurting yourself." So on one hand, we see that love, that attachment to prayer. On the other hand, we see that the azan is being called. We are hearing the azan and we are still sleeping. So in other words, when you look at Ahlul Bayt also, their love for prayer was such, their focus was such in prayer, that when Imam Ali was hit with an arrow, we see Rasulullah advised the Muslims, take the arrow out when he's in prayer, he will not notice the difference. You see, imagine this. Their love for prayer on one hand, and our lack of interest on the other hand. Sometimes we need to see what is it that they had and their example had that we are not following, or something that we have done that is making us not have focus and that love for Allah's worship. These are things that we need to understand, because when we look at the difference, we see truly that if it wasn't for the responsibilities they had to guide the people, you cannot take them away from the prayers. Their example was such. And right now the only thing is just to make us understand one of the reasons why this happens to us, why this happens to people, that they cannot put their heart in prayer. Their heart is not in prayer. Their mind is not in prayer. So that we have an understanding today, and then hopefully this can encourage us to know and have some ma'rifat about how to make that love of ibadah a reality in our life. Send me salawat. You know, in the story of Yusuf, you see that those who have heard the story, when you look at the story, you will see that he was oppressed by his brothers. He was unjustly dealt with by his brothers. They threw him in the well to die, and they left him there to die. But obviously Allah's is trying to explain to us also here that even though they left him there to die, but Allah helped him to escape from there. He went through his life and ultimately became a king. And he became the king of Egypt. And Allah here just tries to give this message to us that no one can harm you. No one can help you. The brothers of Yusuf tried to harm him and to end his life. But their intention and their doing it does not mean that it will happen. Allah is trying to teach us here that if someone wants to harm you, they cannot harm you. If someone wants to help you, they cannot help you. If you are a believer in Allah, then no one can harm you. And if you are an enemy of Allah, then no one can help you. So now, when in this whole situation, right, I just want to make, because of the fact that today is Ashura, just to give you how Allah teaches us in the Quran. In this case, what happened is that the brothers of Yusuf came to their father. They said, we want to go out and play. We want to take Yusuf with us. We want to take Yusuf with us. So Yaqub replied back and said, listen, if you want to go, you go ahead. But don't take Yusuf. They said, why? We are his older brothers. We also love him. Don't you trust us? Let us go. And here Allah, he mentions a statement that Yaqub made, which is quite incredible. And this one line can really explain to us many things. This is for our own information so that we understand. Yaqub, when he heard their insistence, he said a strange thing. He said, أَخَافُ أَنْ يَأْكُلَ الذِّئْبُ. He said, I'm afraid that a wolf might eat him. He said, I'm afraid that a wolf might eat him. So now, understand this. The brothers had a plan. Yaqub already mentioned the excuse that they will bring in front of them. He said, I'm afraid a wolf might eat him. So at least if they were smart, then they would say another excuse. But they came back to him with the same excuse. When they came back and said, we lost Yusuf, why? Because a wolf ate him. You see, this excuse they were going to use, Yaqub already knew this excuse. So Allah, with this statement of Yaqub, is trying to say that Yaqub is a messenger of Allah, a prophet of Allah. And he knew what was going to happen. And he knew the excuse they were going to make also. They didn't even change the excuse. They said the same thing that he said, that this will happen. Imagine this. He said the same thing that he had mentioned. Allah is saying that a prophet like Yaqub knows what's going to happen in the future. So if a prophet like Yaqub knows what's going to happen in the future, then the messenger of Allah is the best of all the prophets. If Yaqub knows the future, then Allah is saying, how can you doubt that the prophet of Allah does not know the future? Salawat ala Muhammad wa alihi. In one sentence and in one place, you see Allah, how He explained this. They went out to kill Yusuf. They went out to harm Yusuf. They blamed the wolf and they said the wolf ate him. When they blamed the wolf, my brothers, understand this, how Allah is explaining to us something. So that those who read the Quran can tell those others who read the Quran what is the teachings of Allah, what is the ma'rifah that Allah is trying to give. He says that the excuse they made was the wolf. This excuse, my brothers and sisters, was the best proof that Yusuf was innocent. The best proof for the innocence of Yusuf was this excuse that they gave, that the wolf did it. You see, if you want to hurt a criminal, if you want to harm someone who's already a criminal and who has done a crime, then you would gladly take the credit for it and said, yes, I did it. See, he was wrong and I did it. But if someone is innocent and you harm him, then human psychology is you should not take the blame for it because what you did was wrong. Well, let me explain through an example. You know, if a child is acting bad, let's say he does something wrong. He does something wrong, he says a bad word or something. And one of the elders, they are there, and they see that he said something bad, which was inappropriate. So, he hit his hand. The child starts to cry. And obviously the mother and father are upset. Who hit my child? Who hit my child? They come and ask him, did you hit my child? Now at that point, what would he say? He said, yes. Why did you hit him? Because he used inappropriate language. You see, if the child is bad, and you hit him, or you discipline him, you are ready to take the credit for it. Why? Because he is wrong and you are right. Now let's say the child is innocent, he didn't do anything. And you just went and slapped him in the face because he didn't like him. He didn't do anything, you slapped him in the face. Now, if the same question is asked, then you will be like, I didn't do it. It was only an accident. I didn't do it. See, imagine this. If he is innocent, you won't take the blame. If he's a criminal, then you will take the blame. My brothers, this example of Yusuf is teaching that if Yusuf was wrong, if Yusuf was bad, if Yusuf did wrong, then the brothers won't have any reason to give an excuse that a wolf ate him. They would say that, yes, we hurt him because he was bad, he was wrong, but they knew that Yusuf was innocent. And blaming the wolf is the best proof that Yusuf was innocent and they are the criminals. They are wrong. If you understood this example, then you would know and you can apply it everywhere. If you want to know the innocence of a victim, you know it when the people or the person who hurt him is not ready to take the blame for what he has done to him. This is the best way to know who's the criminal and who's innocent. This is the reason that when it came to the Shahadat of Imam Hussein, when Yazid was asked, did you kill him? He said, I didn't do it, Ibn Ziyad did it. When Ibn Ziyad was asked, did you do it? He said, I didn't do it, Umar ibn Sa'd did it. When Umar ibn Sa'd was asked, did you do it? No, I didn't do it, Shimr did it. Dispatching the buck and putting the responsibility on the others is showing that at that point, they knew what they had done was wrong. See, if they were true to say that Hussein is the culprit, Hussein is the person who's making mischief, Hussein is the wrongdoer, Hussein is doing wrong, and Hussein is a rebel, if it was right, they wouldn't have any reason to take the... They wouldn't have any reason to give the responsibility to the other. They would happily take the responsibility and say, yes, we killed Hussein, but no one is ready to admit that. This itself shows, this is the best proof that Hussein was innocent and they were the criminals. You see that? Understand how Quran is teaching us, my brothers. Let me tell you one more thing from this, and then I'll go on. Send me salawats. You see, at this point, when the news came back, Yaqub started to cry. He lost his son. He started to cry. And he cried. And he cried a lot. It said that he cried so much that his eyes went blind. He cried so much for his son. Now, the children, the other children, they were a little bit afraid. And Allah, He quotes this statement of the children. And under that, and I want you to understand the statement, my brothers and sisters. What did He quote? He says, I mean, they all gathered together and they said, listen, this can't go on. So they came to their own father, who was a messenger of Allah. And they said, you shouldn't cry. Why are you crying? Why are you crying so much? You are acting like the people of Jahiliyyah. They are telling the Prophet, you are acting like the people of Jahiliyyah. You shouldn't cry so much. You are acting like those people of the old. You shouldn't be crying so much. And he's crying. I mean, what do you have an issue with my crying? My son died, I want to cry. But they want him to stop crying. You see, my brothers and sisters, understand this. The whole issue is, Yusuf is crying because his son has died and he wants to show that his son has died. There was zulm that was done and his son has died. The brothers of Yusuf, they want to stop him from crying because they are afraid. The more he cries, the more the chances are that their crime will be revealed, that their crime will be exposed. So from this incident of Quran, we understood who cries and who stops others from crying. Who cries and who stops others from crying? Those who want to show that there was zulm done and they want to show the mazlumiyat of someone they lost, they are the ones who cry. And those who want to hide their crime and do not want it to be exposed, they are the ones who say, do not cry. And this is some, if you understood this, now if those people who read the Quran, now if they know who cries and who doesn't cry and who stops people from crying, they would know, if we are crying for Hussein, we are trying to show that he was Muslim. And if someone is stopping us from crying, it means that they want to hide a crime that they have done and they do not want it to be exposed. Salawat ala Muhammad wa ala. Understand this. So now Allah is explaining this in the Quran, and those who read the Quran, for them this is hujjah. Those who say that we should cry and this is wrong to cry, go and read the incident of Yusuf and Ya'qub, and then you will understand it from there. So now, when we go on, my brothers and sisters, the whole incident went on. Yusuf became a slave, he went to jail, and after that he became a king. All of this happened. The brothers came and met him, Ya'qub met him, everything was happy. This was one of those stories in the Quran that has a happy ending. But after all this happened, and this is what I want you to understand right now. After all of this happened, and after all these things happened, the brothers had a question in their mind. They had a question in their mind and they said to each other that, you know what, we have done wrong to Yusuf. But one thing happened now. They had this question in their mind that we have done wrong to Yusuf. Really, he was a prophet of Allah, and we left him to die. We oppressed him. We harmed him. Why did Allah punish us for it? Why did Allah send his azab if he did this? We did this, we are wrong, we are guilty, we admit it. Why did Allah send an azab for us? So they went to Ya'qub, their father, and they said, Father, we have this question. You know, we want to, know that we have done harm to Yusuf. We did wrong to Yusuf. We harmed him, we oppressed him. We admit that. But tell us one thing. Why didn't Allah punish us for it? Why did Allah send an azab to us for it? Ya'qub said, it's a legitimate question. So he went to Allah and asked Allah, that Allah, why didn't you punish my children for harming Yusuf and for oppressing Yusuf? Allah replied back and said, I have punished them. I have sent my azab on them. And he came back to the children and he said, Allah said, he has sent azab on them. That Allah has sent his azab on you. They looked at each other and said, what azab? Where did it come? Imagine this. Our lives were good. We were happy. We had wives, children. Our lives are happy. We were good. It was Yusuf. He went through all the hardships. He was a slave. He became a slave. He went to jail. His whole life was that of hardship because of us. And our lives were so good. We had homes. We had business, we had all the children, wives, all the lives were happy. What was this azab? Where did the azab come? My friends, understand this if you can take this message today. They went back to Ya'qub and they said, where did the azab come? Ya'qub asked Allah, that Allah, what is the azab you sent them? They don't know where the azab came. What is your punishment? Allah replied back and he said to Ya'qub, go and tell them, what greater azab is there in this dunya? And what greater punishment there is there in this dunya that I have taken away from them the enjoyment of my ibadah? They will enjoy everything else in their life, but they will not enjoy my prayers. I've taken that away. They will have lazzat in every other thing, but they will not find enjoyment in my worship. You can watch a movie for 3 hours, you will not have any pain. But to pray two rakat, you will have a burden. This is the azab of Allah on those people who have done wrong in their lives. When someone does not love the worship of Allah, it's because of the wrongs that he has done in his past. The disobedience that he has done in his past. My brothers, this is where the azab comes. This is how you know that you are in the azab of Allah. Allah is saying you will enjoy everything else. Your whole life you will see, you will do it for hours, you will do it for days. But when it comes to my worship, it will be a burden. He says, that is the azab I get. If we can take that message and understand that, and go back now in our lives and see, where is the mistakes we have made in our lives? In order to rectify this, we need to go back and see, where are those things we have done in our lives that we see are hurting us today, and make istighfar for those things. Recompense for those things. Make tawbah for those things in our lives. This is the reason you see that those who are pure, when they pray to Allah, you see the love they have in prayers. When they do ibadah to Allah, you see the love they have in ibadah. This is where the difference comes in. When you see those people, when you see the imams, when you see those people who were raised in the household of the imams, when you see the companions of Imam Hussein, when you see the children of Imam Hussein, when you see Imam Hussein himself, and you see the love that he had for Allah and to be with Allah, this is because of that purity. This is because of that building of relationship that he had. But my brothers, if we can now give our condolences to the Imam of the time, see the example that Imam Hussein has for us, and now look back at him, truly pray to Allah that Allah, through this azah that we have for Imam Hussein, through this mourning that we have for Imam Hussein, Allah, rectify all the wrongs that we have done so that our relationship with you can be better. Because it would be a tragedy for us that the Imam is asking and saying, Hal min nasirin yansurana, and we listen to it and do not go forth the Imam. Let not our weaknesses and let not our mistakes be the reason and the obstacle that we don't go and answer the call of Imam Hussein. My friends, today is the day of Ashura. For 10 days you have been giving your condolences to Fatima. And for all these nights, Fatima has been coming to you. And she has been collecting the tears that you give for Imam Hussein. And now is the time, today is the day when the tragedy happened. And today is the day that we truly should give our condolences and our tears to the Imam of our time. Imam has given his all now. And you see, it wasn't, I had explained this before, but you see, it wasn't that Imam Hussein just out of nowhere did this. No, you see that every one of Ahlul Bayt, from the Prophet to Imam Ali to Hazrat Fatima to Imam Hassan, they all trained Imam Hussein in such a way that Imam Hussein understands his duty today in Karbala. Rasulullah brought him on the shoulders and took him back and forth to the masjid. And it is said he did that 72 times until he was perspiring and Phoebe was so tired that Fatima told Hussein, "Hussein, why are you doing this to your grandfather?" And we see that Rasulullah said, "Do not say anything to Hussein. I am doing this because on the day of Ashura, Hussein will go back 72 times to the battlefield to save my religion, to save Islam, so that Islam can have life." Now the time has come. Now the time has come, my brothers and sisters, that now Hussein has given all the martyrs. Hussein has given all his sacrifices. Now there is one more thing to sacrifice for Hussein, and that is his own life. That is his own life. Everything has been sacrificed. And he can see all the things that have been sacrificed. When everything he had given, now he was the only one to give. His sacrifice was the only thing remaining. At that point, it is said in the books of Maqtal, at that point, Imam Hussein came in front of his tents. He came in front of his tents, sat down on the ground under the sun. He sat down on the ground under the sun. And then he just looked at the battlefield. He looked at the battlefield. He looked at each of the martyrs that he had given. Now I don't know what was going on in his mind. This is that relationship between him and Allah, whatever he was saying. But as soon as he went through the whole battlefield, he saw the whole thing, whatever thoughts and reflections that were going in Imam Hussein's mind. Now Imam Hussein stood up. He came back. Now he comes back to the tents and says, "Now is the time for me to go. All the ladies of the Haram of Rasulullah are waiting there for him. They know that he is going." You see, it is very hard for them to let Hussein go. Because they know the only thing that is stopping the army from coming into the tents is Imam Hussein. The only thing that is an obstacle for this army to come into the tents and take the hurmat of Rasulullah is Imam Hussein. And they gave everything they had for Hussein. Umm Layla looks at her own Ali Akbar and says, "I gave Ali Akbar." Umm Parwa gave Qasim. Umm Rabab gave Ali Asghar. Everyone gave what they had to give. Now when Imam Hussein came inside, they all came around Imam Hussein, made a circle around him, started hitting their faces, and they said, "Wa Husayna! Wa Husayna! Wa Hariba! Hussein, we have given you what we have to give. We have given you all that we could give. There's nothing more to give." Hussein said that this is it. This is time for me to go. You know it is time for me to go. After me, I want you to be patient. I want you to be patient because my mission will continue through you. My mission will go through you. Imam Hussein gave that advice to the ladies of the Haram. But what can they do? Hussein is leaving now. Hussein is leaving. He takes Zainab into another room. He takes Zainab into another room and advises Zainab as to what she is supposed to do. And then in one strange sentence, he says, "Itini bilibasin atik." Zainab, go and get me an old dress of mine. Get me an old dress of mine. Hussein, Zainab brings out the dress, an old dress of his. He takes out that dress that is filled with the blood of martyrs. He takes it out, gives that to Zainab, takes this old dress, puts this on, and now he does something that he has never done in his life. From different places, he starts to tear the dress. From different places, he starts to tear the dress. Zainab said, "Why are you doing this, my brother?" He said, "Zainab, just pray that they don't take this dress of mine." But what can I say? After Hussein had died, they came and took that dress. They came and took his thing. They came and ripped his ears. They cut his fingers. Oh, مصیبتا وا مصیبتا. Now Hussein went to meet his son. He went to meet his son. Imam Sajjad was in his bed in a state of unconsciousness. Imam Hussein went to him and he woke him up. He said, "Wake up, my son, wake up." Imam Sajjad wakes up. He looks at his father. He knows the situation. Imam Hussain tells him, "My son, it is time for me to go. I have to go to the battlefield." Imam Sajjad, in a wonderment, says, "Father, why are you going? Why are you going? Where are your companions?" He said, "They're dead." "Where's Ali Akbar?" Imam Hussain said, "He's dead." "Where are my cousins? Where's Qasim? Where's the only people?" He said, "They're dead." "Where's Abbas?" "He's lying near the river." Hussain said, "Who are you going to ask of my son? What can I say? Even Ali Asghar is dead." Imam Sajjad tried to get up and said, "Then father, let me go and protect you." He said, "No, my son, you are the Imam after me. You have other tasks that you will face, and your task will be much more severe than mine. My task is that of sacrifice. Your task will be in the bazaar of Kufa and Shaf." "No, my son, the reason I came here is one, to give the imamah over to you, so you are the imam of the time. And then, my brothers and sisters, you are the shira of Imam Hussain. You are the lover of Imam Hussain. You know, on the day of Ashura, in his last wasiyat, he remembered you. He remembered you in his last wasiyat, and he told Imam Sajjad, that Sajjad, when you go back, tell my Shia about my thirst and how thirsty I was in Karbala. I did not have water. How thirsty I was. Tell them to remember my thirst. And then when they drink a cold glass of water, remember my thirst." Hussain on the day of Ashura is remembering you. Can you think of this? He has lost his children, but he's saying, "Give my salam to my Shia when you go back. Give my salam to my Shia and tell them I miss them here on the day of Ashura." May Allah raise you and your children to be with the Imam. How fortunate are those who are with the Imam. Imam now takes leave of Imam Sajjad. He takes leave of Imam Sajjad. Now he goes in his last farewell. He goes now as he is going, as he is leaving. Now he gets on his horse and says to his horse, My faithful horse, you have done well for me. You have always been obedient to me. Just one more time, I want to give you a burden. Take me out one more time." And he wants to make his horse go. But the horse does not go. So the horse doesn't go. So now what happens is that Hussain says, "You are not leaving, you are not going. One more time, my obedient friend, one more time I ask you." The horse points to his legs. The horse points to his legs. He says, as if he's saying, how can I live? Imam, my life is for you. I will give my life. But how can I live? Your heart is holding my life. Hussein looks down at the legs of the horse and he sees Sakina holding the horse and saying, Zuljana, do not take my horse, do not take my father to the battlefield. Do not take him to the battlefield. Everyone who has gone there did not come back. I don't want to lose my father. Hussein came down, picked up Sakina and said, Sakina, you are crying, Sakina. How can I see you cry? How can I see tears in your eyes? Sakina, come near me, Sakina. What is it that you want? You know, Sakina, let me tell you how I cannot see you cry. You are the source of my happiness. You know, you are the answer to the prayers I used to make in Tahajjud. You are the answer and reply to the dua I made in Tahajjud to Allah, that Allah give me a daughter who would love me and I would